So our next guest is State Senator Monka Dhingra, who represents
friend of the show.
That's right.
Who represents? Welcome, Senator. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I always enjoy being on the show.
We appreciate you joining us. She's a Democrat who represents. I'll give a little background here: the 45th legislative district, and why that's important is, as we mentioned earlier. The epicenter, if you will, of the COVID pandemic, really here in the United States, one of the places it first started was right there in your neck of the woods up there. So I just wanted to ask you, when were you first made aware of what's going on, and how did you, first come across, the potential, crisis that just unfolded very quickly? And how much did you know about COVID-19 at the time when this happened? I mean, how educated were you on the virus?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I started learning about COVID-19 in January with it starting in China and kind of seeing how it's progressing through the world. And I think we felt kind of secure in the United States, I would say, until March. And then we saw the first case that happened in the state of Washington. And then when we heard about the long-term facility in Kirkland, I think that's when it really hit home. Mm-hmm. And because it was in a facility, I think we really very quickly understood how contagious it was and how fast it can spread, and really understood early on in our state that you could be asymptomatic and still pass the disease on. So it's really fortunate that that's the way it started for us here in Washington. Mm-hmm. But there were a lot of lessons learned, and a lot of the other nursing homes or a lot of our larger institutions actually learned a lot from what happened in Kirkland. And, take a look at our state hospital, Western. They've had a few cases, but they've been able to contain it. Our prisons, where we're also very concerned about it spreading, and our jails, they have been able to contain it so far. And so it really was we learned a lot from it, though it's really, really unfortunate that it did happen. It did mm-hmm. force a lot of protocols that these facilities simply don't have, because they've never had to deal with something like that.
And, we just had Governor Inslee on right before you, and we asked him about the fomenting, if you will, resistance across the state to the extension of the stay home, stay safe orders. And I just wanted to get your take on this. What's your opinion on what the governor's been doing? And do you think at this point we have a one size fits all approach, if you will, right? He's made it very clear that he looks at this as a statewide issue, not a regional issue. Do you think there should be a more regional approach to this?
I think that is something we need to look at. But the bottom line is people travel, right? It started in China, mm-hmm. and we're talking about it here in Washington. So the reality is people travel. But as part of his announcement that he made recently, he did say that there are counties and cities where it's not as prevalent. And so if they are able to have a plan for it, there is the possibility of certain counties and cities opening up a little sooner than the rest of the state. Mm-hmm. And, at the end of the day, the cities and counties also have the ability to actually have stricter restrictions than the state. And especially if it's a place like King County, which is very has a very high population, that would make a lot of sense. But if you're talking about, say, Benton County or Ferris County or some of the other places, they may be in a place to open up sooner, but I think we just have to be very, very careful. Do it in a slow manner where we're also testing. And the minute we see the numbers starting to go up, we're going to have to make sure we contain it. We have economists, there's a professor of economics at the University of Michigan, and I've been mm-hmm. listening to some of the talks that she's been giving. And, for the economy, it's much better to delay start and have a slow start rather than open up and then be in a position of shutting down again. That's going to be a lot more detrimental to everybody involved. So I think this is the right approach. It is something that the rest of the country is looking at Washington to see how we're doing it, because I will give a lot of credit to Jay Inslee for relying on the science and the data and really making sure he is holding firm to that.
Well, and that's the challenge here, right, is we haven't experienced anything like this in our lifetime. So we are sort of you know, going with what we know at the moment, right? What we know is with the science, with the metrics, and you know, it's difficult to look into the future and see really where this is going to go in some circumstances. But as you know, there are folks, you know, in small, not just small towns, but towns all over the state, and I'm sure in your district, businesses that are closing that may never open up again. You know, what do you tell those businesses who are confronted with the fact that, you know, quote unquote, the government is telling them that they can't operate and they have to close down because they can't operate based on the stay home orders, stay safe orders.
And you know, that is something we grapple with on a daily basis. I'm actually part of a business recovery task force with the governor's office, and it's bipartisan, bicameral. So we have House Republicans, House Democrats, Senate Democrats, Senate Republicans, and the governor's office working on exactly that. And I think this is where hearing from the industry is very, very important. Recently, we had our auto car dealers come in with a proposal on how they can do online sales with touch-free delivery. And, you know, we were able to talk through that, pass it on to the governor's office as a method of opening up that industry. You know, the construction has come together, and that's why we're opening construction up. We have had a lot of conversations with the retail industry and really talking about curbside pickup and how they can have policies that'll enable them to open. But, you know, the bottom line is this is something that all of us have to come together for the common good, for our health. And so I also have weekly meetings with local business leaders, local chambers of commerce, and also with communities of color who many times feel very left out because they can't access resources the same way that others can.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's just a huge struggle that you hear from folks that they, you know, and we've talked about this before, I think, with you, that there's just this inherent distrust of government out there by a lot of folks. And unfortunately, as the governor mentioned as well, a distrust of science by a lot of folks because of the source of that information, right? If the science is coming from the government in any way, people will question it. So that's a big challenge for folks who are in the business of public safety and public health to be able to communicate messages out there and help people. And then also that sacrifice, as you mentioned, these businesses having to take that sacrifice. It is a difficult thing for a lot of people. And so you hear about it, people are passionate, people are showing up at the Capitol, people are showing up on street corners, and they are upset. So, you know, it's, and I, you know, kudos to you for having those conversations. I know those are not easy with business owners.
They aren't. And I will say it is a small minority that is distrustful of the science. I mean, there are polls after polls about like 75%, 80% of people who do believe the science, who do believe that this is very contagious, who do believe we should stay home in order to stay healthy. So the vast majority of people understand the science, believe in the science, and there is trust. I've also had some really interesting conversations with other businesses who have changed their business model. It has forced them to go online. Because of doing online orders, they actually now are able to gather information on their clients. They have created a web presence. They are now emailing and communicating with their customers, which they weren't earlier. So while it is hard for so many of us, I think there is an opportunity where businesses have changed in the way they provide services. You know, our local National Alliance on Mental Illness Eastside organization has moved all its support groups, peer-to-peer, family-to-family, all online. And they are reaching more people and providing more services than they have ever before. And even when it comes to education, you know, it's very challenging for special needs kids. But, you know, I have teenagers, and I can tell you that my daughter is actually thriving with online learning. And I was talking to someone at OSPI recently, and they're talking about when we come back that maybe things that we have learned that have worked well, that have resulted in us being more efficient or effective, that we hold on to that and incorporate that into our new normal.
Interesting. So I think
there's an opportunity to come back and start doing things differently than we have been doing.
And you know, the funny thing about it is it even extends to radio shows.
It so certainly does.
Where we can have online Zoom meetings and still, you know, have a good quality show.
That's true. Yeah. Though in the past, I would drive down, I would hang out in Vancouver, go to the restaurants. But it's kind of nice to be able to do this from my own home.
It is.
But, you know, to kind of bring back around what we were talking about before, though, it's like with the science issue and everything, one of the things we, when all of this was being proposed early on, was that if it's successful, we won't really know, right? Because it's like the flattening of the curve will happen. You know, so we won't know how many lives have actually been saved. And that's, you know, that's the conundrum is like everybody can sit there and go, well, you know, not too many people got sick. Well, that's because we did all of this, right?
Right. So I know people do say that, but unfortunately, we do have examples of places where things did go badly. I mean, take a look at Italy, take a look at New York. We have been fortunate because we moved early on. Our hospitals did not have that rush that New York did. Right. We did not have doctors who were forced into making a decision between two patients as to which one could get a ventilator. We didn't have to do that. We always had enough ventilators. We always had enough beds. And that's because of what we did. And so while we cannot say how many lives we saved in Washington, we can take a look at other states and say, you know what? Yep. We did good.
And the other thing, too, is that we are still experiencing struggles, though, like here in Southwest Washington, we have a lot of our folks, our healthcare workers who do go over into Oregon and back and forth. And there have been we had one of the ICU nurses at OHSU who came on to say that there was a struggle about having enough masks and PPE, personal protective equipment, for each of the different nurses and doctors and such. And so that's been a real struggle for them, but wanted to say thank you guys for all the work that you've done up in Olympia and that to be able to get that stuff here for our folks.
And that's really such a great point, because that is the issue with opening up too quickly, because the people who are working, they don't have enough supplies to protect themselves. So if you have more and more people out on the roads and more people at different businesses, you are going to continue to see that infection grow because we don't have enough PPEs. And that's why that is one of the make availability of PPEs to make sure we're safe. And I'll say, if you guys go out, wear a mask.
Yep. I have been preaching that as much as I can to everybody, that at least at minimum, be considerate and wear a mask, because it is the responsible thing to do.
So, Lone Ranger mask, right?
Yeah, well, that would work.
No.
Well, I mean, if you could do that and cover your face at the same time, right?
There you go. Both. Yeah, well, then I your bandana, put a coffee filter in there. And
then I wouldn't be able to go to the Mayo Clinic and look people in the eye. Oh, wait a minute. That's a different person. Sorry.
That's a different one, yeah.
That's a different person.
So I did want to touch a little bit on, you know, some of the negative things we've seen happen with the stay home, stay safe orders, right? And I know that, you know, sexual assault is and domestic violence are near and dear to you, Senator. And unfortunately, we've seen an increase in domestic violence. We've seen a increase in mental health issues. So I know you spent quite a bit of time working on this before you got into the Senate and in the Senate. So what are your thoughts on this, and what have you learned here in the last couple of months that you may take back with you to the next session to maybe correct some of this or help with this? Because we may see this again, right? We may see another, unfortunately, we may see another, you know, stay home order at some point in the near future after we get back to quote unquote normal, right? So how do we maybe get ahead of that?
Absolutely. I think come, you know, November, October, during the flu season, I think we're all expecting that this is going to come back. For a lot of us who have been working in the sexual assault, domestic violence arena, we know and recognize that home is not a safe place for everybody. Mm-hmm. And so because of the stay home, stay healthy order, that is something that a lot of people have now become aware of. And it is very, very challenging because we are seeing a rise in domestic violence. Law enforcement agencies across the state are reporting those. I know in King County, we have actually, of course, have gone to an online protection order filing. And so I would encourage anyone out there, please know that the advocates are still working, that organizations are still open, the mm-hmm. courts are still processing protection orders and no contact orders. And so I would urge everyone that if they are in a dangerous situation, to please call for help. Yeah. But the honest truth of the matter is that housing is an issue. So if you do need to separate from someone who's abusing you, the very limited places that people can go to. So, you know, like one of the things I mentioned about things we can learn about it, I'm really hoping that the electronic filing of no contact orders and protection orders is something that continues in the future, mm-hmm. because we have learned that is a good system to have. And really making sure that we're investing more in housing. The more vulnerable yeah. the people are, the more important it is to have safe shelter.
Definitely, definitely.
Absolutely. Now, Senator, we're going to go in a little bit different direction here. We have a question from one of our listeners, Ken, who's asking, if businesses such as retail can follow all of the guidelines of cleanliness, such as masks, gloves, social distancing, et cetera, just as the big box stores do, like Walmart, Home Depot and such, why can't they reopen right now?
Absolutely. And I think that is something we are looking at the Business Recovery Task Force, mm-hmm. is saying, how do small businesses open? Because they're the ones who are struggling and suffering the most. So some of the new orders that the governor mentioned that we're going to see with the phase one, phase two, retail is definitely something that we're looking at having the industry come up with agreed upon guidelines that they're all going to agree to, very similar to the way the construction industry did. So that is definitely in the works. And okay. I'm very hopeful that that is something that will be happening soon.
Great. Okay, good. Good news. I wanted to go on to a different subject here as we're jumping around a little bit, but this issue is really important here in Southwest Washington. And I wanted to make sure that we touched on this a little bit with you, Senator. So SB 5395, which requires comprehensive sexual education in our schools, passed this last session and was signed by the governor. Very contentious issue here in Southwest Washington, and I'm sure in other places as well. We have petitions circulating, people saying things like, you know, these requirements will, you know, sexualize children. You know, many parents will likely opt out. And with 295 school districts in our state and parents opt out and curriculum may be varying from teacher to teacher, school to school, how do we implement these requirements in an equitable way? I know that that's a concern for folks who actually do support this bill.
So thank you for asking that question. And actually, I love that we talked about domestic violence and sexual assault just before we got to this question, because I firmly believe, as do many of the prosecutors who I work with, that mm-hmm. the way we combat domestic violence and sexual assault in our state is through a comprehensive sex ed, is about understanding what informed consent means, what healthy relationships mean, what mm-hmm. power and control mean. And that is what this curriculum really is about. Mm-hmm. For people who have concerns about it, they're not really taking a look at it. One of the school districts that has implemented some of that curriculum is Lake Washington School District, where my kids go.
Okay.
And there is still a lot of opportunity to personalize a curriculum for the schools that want to do it. But at least there's a basic curriculum that is based on science and on data and on healthy relationships. And so if you can get to the core of what it is, and if people actually understand what their kids are going to be learning, we're going to see a lot of parents come around to it. For us parents who have actually gone through some of this stuff, we understand the value of it. And again, as someone who's worked with survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault, this is really the way in which we start ensuring that our state starts lessening the amount of domestic violence and sexual assault we see. It starts with teaching our children about consent and healthy bodies.
And this is, and again, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just to make the point that this is age-appropriate material.
Absolutely, it's age appropriate. You know, in elementary school, you're just learning about good touch and bad touch, mm-hmm. and, you know, stranger danger. And those are the kinds of things we're still talking to them about anyway. In yeah. middle school, you move on to talk about puberty and other things. And in high school, then you go ahead and talk about really a lot of issues around sex and being sexually active. Our kids, this is an age where they all have smartphones. The amount of information they are yeah. getting is truly shocking. So let's make sure they have information in our schools that's based on science. And our bodies are not things we need to be ashamed of. We need to understand biology, and we need to really understand the science behind how our bodies function.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. So Senator, we're going to ask you one last question. Again, love this bouncing around, but we're going to bring it back to businesses and everything. And another listener question is once we're back to opening up the state and people are working again, what's the plan to replenish the state's bank account? And will programs be cut or to bring the state into budget, or will there be tax and fee increases?
I believe that's the $8 billion question. It is something that we have been really concerned about. And we were fortunate on timing that we had the stay home, stay healthy order, and then the governor got our budget. And so he was able to actually veto a lot of the new programs. And so that helped put us in a good position for this fiscal year moving forward. We also, in the last 3 years, have done an incredible job with our surplus account. We have over $3 billion for our rainy day fund because we really have done a good job balancing our budget and being really good stewards of the money that our state has. We will definitely be relying on a lot of the federal money that we have received. So yes, unfortunately, we will be taking a look at tax cuts coming down the road. But I'm really hoping it's very different than the recession we had earlier, because this is not a recession. We don't have businesses that are failing. We have businesses that are still there. We just have to make sure that they can continue and they can continue to thrive. But we don't have businesses failing yet. And so really a lot of our effort in opening up is to make sure those small businesses especially and individual people have the support they need to continue thriving as they were last year. So I'll say it's not as bad as the recession from years before. Our state is in a better position given the fiscal decisions we have made this year and the last few years. But we are having budget meetings on a regular basis and getting updates regularly, so we are prepared for what's coming next.
I thought you guys were a part-time legislature. I mean, it sounds like you're sounds like it's a bit more than that these days, huh?
It's always, when I decided to run for office 4 years ago, I obviously, believed the rhetoric that this is a part-time gig. Let me tell you, it is never not a part-time gig at all.
That's the one thing we've talked to so many of you folks that are up in Olympia for us, and it's a pretty common theme. It is a full-time, year-round thing. So we really do appreciate your service. I know you
absolutely
exactly, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come on with us today, State Senator Monica Dingra from the 45th. The Fighting 45th, right?
That's right.
I'm not sure what you guys call it. The Fighting 45th. We'll go with that.
That is what we call it.
All right. Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us on Filibusters today, and hope we'll have you back soon.
Absolutely. I love it. Thank you so much, you guys.
Thanks again. All
right. Thanks. Bye. All right, John. We're going to take a break. John, take it away.
All right. So KXRW wants to thank our friends and sponsors at Boomerang Therapy Works, where exercise is medicine. They offer a variety of one-on-one treatment options that can be tailored to your health and wellness. They offer physical therapy, massage therapy, personal trainers, exercise programs, group classes, and specialize in customized Parkinson's treatments. Located in downtown Vancouver, find out more at BoomerangTherapyWorks.com, where exercise is medicine. We also want to thank our sponsor and friends at Say Chow Catering, Columbia Room Tap Room and Eatery. Chef Peter has been cooking for over 27 years in the Vancouver area. Private events include wine tasting, wine dinners, appetizer parties, and cooking demos. Say Chow Tap Room and Eatery boasts space for private events or drop in for a quick refreshment and live music on Thursday and Friday evenings when everything opens up again. Just a stone's throw away from the Columbia River, Say Chow's Greater Vancouver's premier catering company, conveniently located at 2501 Southeast Columbia Way, Suite 270 in Vancouver. More information available at www.say-chow.com. That's say-chow.com, or directly at 360-210-5522. We also want to say that we love to continue bringing great programming like this because, hey, you know, we're a wonderful show. I love telling people that we are. But seriously, you know, our show, along with many of the other ones that we have on KXRW, we need your help. We need your help by donating, becoming a one-time donor or a sustaining donor. And you can do that at www.kxrwvancouver.org/donate and help us keep getting training for our producers and our on-air talent, as well as upgrading the equipment so that we can continue to bring wonderful content like this.
Well said, John. Well said. Well said. You know, yeah. and a special thank you again to those businesses and sponsors who, some of which have been with KXRW from the beginning or for a very long time, and much appreciated their continued support. So, man, John, we had a show today.
We did.
It was great. I really enjoyed our opportunity there to chat with the governor and tried to, you know, ask him some questions that, you know, maybe he's not getting as much. I felt it was important for him to address a lot of the concerns that are out there. I hear it from folks all the time. I'm sure you see it and you hear it as well.
Yep.
You know, people that do respect the science, but equally are frustrated that they can't go to work or their business can't open or that they're, you know, not sure what's going to happen next, you know? And so it's like this, I think there's, you know, in my experience here, and John, you know, maybe if you see things differently than me, you can, you know, let me know here. I'm talking off key here, but you know, most people do want folks to be healthy and safe. It's just, I think the challenge that we're having here, as the mitigation efforts have been successful, so folks maybe aren't, they haven't seen how bad it could have been, like we talked about earlier here in the show.
Right.
So now things are, you know, not as bad as we thought it might be. And so therefore, in their eyes, that means we should really just loosen things up significantly, quickly.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I think was really important for having the governor and Senator Dingra on is that a lot of times people are talking about how they only seem to be concerned with what's going on up in King County, you know, the Seattle, Redmond, Kirkland area. And, you know, we down here in Southwest Washington, we do have a little bit different concerns because of the fact that we're so closely associated with Oregon and the Portland market and our own things. So having them be able to discuss how those decisions are going to affect the folks here in Southwest Washington is important. And I'm very happy that they were able to come on and discuss that with us.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And we really appreciate that opportunity. I again wanted to take this opportunity to thank both of our guests. I wanted to thank X-Ray FM and our partnership with us, and Mr. Chase there, manning the board at the station. Thank you, sir, for stepping in and helping us out today. And most importantly, we want to thank everybody who's listening and been there with us. You know, we want everybody to take care, be safe, be healthy,
and stay informed.
And stay informed. So, folks, thanks for tuning in to Filibusters. We will catch you next time. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And do want to thank everybody for tuning into that. It was a wonderful conversation with some of the leaders up there in Washington State. And always appreciate the KXRW programming, especially, I shouldn't say especially when it's live, because it's great all of the time, but just really appreciate their participation in the community and watching that their own community grow and see some of the great programming that they're able to put out up there. And it's super relevant to Southwest Washington, and I think it's a great community service what they're doing. So just thanks to them. Stay tuned. Up in just a moment, we're going to hear from Radio Survivor, a longtime program here on X-Ray FM, coming up in just a moment. So stay tuned for that, and thanks for listening. You are listening to KXRY Portland and KQAC HD3 Portland at 107.1 and 91.1 FM in the Portland area, streaming online everywhere at xray.fm.
You're listening to X-Ray FM on 107.1
and 91.1 FM, now streaming online at xray.fm.
Radio is yours.
Welcome to Radio Survivor. We're here for the love of radio and sound. I'm Paul Riesmandel.
Hello, everybody. Eric Klein here.
And I'm Jennifer Waits.